Before we get started, I want to say a big thank you to everyone who has stepped in through our Patreon site to support what Skirmish Play does, to kind of help our mission out, to help us do some unique things. That's made it possible for us to upgrade some of our equipment this year. We're really excited to take it out there. We did that over the summer, to take it out there, make some things happen this fall, some kind of unique things. And you guys with Patreon have really made that possible. We hope more folks will jump on board with us. Come on and support us. You can check it out at patreon.com/skirmishplay. Definitely want to, to have anybody who is, excited about what we're doing over here, excited about our mission, to jump in and come out and support us. So that's definitely a critical part of what we do. So thanks a lot, and enjoy the podcast. Bart Isley, I'm here with Ryan Yeaman for the latest edition of the Skirmish Play podcast. And right off the top, we'd like to thank the SP Podcast presenting sponsor, C&G Paving. If you want your paving or asphalt job done right the first time, you want C&G to knock it out. With 30 years of experience under owner Jeff Gray, this family-owned local business has been taking care of roads, parking lots, and driveways across Central Virginia for decades. And with a 5-star rating on Facebook, you know they're going to get it right. Give them a call at 540-456-6179 today for a free estimate. Really appreciate them jumping on board with us. And we're down to two teams now after last week, but two teams that are now just maybe three wins away from a state championship. And, you got to start with the team that went on the road to get the job done, 12-0, now 12-0 now. Louisa County football, you were down there to see them get it done against a really good Monacan squad.
That's the best football game I've seen in years. Probably most recently, I would say like the 2014 Waynesboro Western regional final.
Yeah.
I think that's probably this is the best game I've seen since then. I mean, there was everything in this one. Louisa going down early. And that sideline, you got to give that coaching staff credit. They prepared the kids for this, that, Monacan was going to come out slinging it, just whipping the ball around the field, doing a lot of screen plays and finding success early. And Louisa just had to stick to their guns. And, they're down 21-7, and then just slowly but surely, they just lean on you, put that grind on you. That backfield's amazing. Raekwon Jones makes an interception going into the half that I think really sort of turned the tide. That was, you're talking a field goal situation. They kick two field goals. Monacan goes up. Both they convert both, but Louisa was offsides on one, and I think there was a roughing the kicker on the other. And so they take the points off the board, not once, but twice. And then Jones comes up with that interception. And then in the second half, once they got that tying touchdown, once it was 21-21, all the hype, the momentum was on Louisa's side. They knew they were going to win that thing. And they come up with fourth down stops when they need it. Jones has an unbelievable run. Whalen on a fourth and four from like midfield. Gutsy play calling there from Louisa, and he gets a touchdown out of that. I think it was like 29-yarder kind of thing. Just unbelievable game from start to finish. And, there's even a Louisa fumble late in that one when Monacan cuts it to seven. And, they're just trying to grind out the clock. And if Monacan just scoops and scores that, we're headed to overtime. Just couldn't ask for a better playoff game. And it was a fantastic effort from Louisa, both sides of the ball to find a way to get it done and move on. And no other Louisa team has been in this territory except the 06 squad. So now, the three squads that have put together the undefeated regular seasons for the Lions, the 06, the 2010 team, and this team, these guys moved past the 010 team because they couldn't get past the second round. So that's, rarefied air for this program, and
you've
got to be excited for them going forward. If they can beat Monacan, there's no reason they can't win any of these other games.
There's no question about it. That's a really good Monacan squad. That's a big win. They get a tough one against Dinwiddie coming up. Obviously, I was talking to one of the Goochland coaches about how they sort of play on emotion, that Louisa and Goochland, there's some shared DNA between those two programs that they can get motivated. They can get emotional. There's not that
you know, sometimes programs struggle with a little bit of cynicism. Maybe that old school motivational tactic doesn't work. But this is a Louisa team that you really can't underestimate how much they're playing for Fisher right now.
Yeah, there's that. And then you can tell a senior class. I mean, Fisher had the line that explained it best. He's like, I just don't want this to end. And he was very emotional when he was talking about that. And the senior class is the same way. And most of those guys are linemen. And, you know, so it's not just your teammate. It's the guy literally lining up next to you. And you're in the trenches together. I think there's something very, I don't know, yeoman-like. That there's an added quality that you get from players and teams.
These are
like
just
that.
Guys going to work, man.
And we're talking about two teams that do a lot of running the ball. I just think that there's that extra element there. I mean, now both programs have the same issue. They can't really go down by much more than 14. You're, like Georgia Tech is sort of the classic example of if you get up 21 on them, you're safe. So. You got to keep things close. You know, there's no such thing as a lead that's too large, kind of thing. But yeah, we'll see going forward if they can just keep sort of tapping into that. We don't care if we're the underdog. We're going to find a way to grind our way through this.
Yeah, it's just been really impressive to me that they've so stuck to their identity. Sure, there's been like moments where we saw the trick play against Orange where they do the sort of double pass and they've done some things, but like that is all within the realm. You know, who, Louisa believes in who they are. They believe in that identity, and they trust that identity. And that's so big for a high school football
team. And I think the real big thing is that they found out that they could do this against Cortland in that first round. And this is 2 weeks in a row that they've been playing, you know, from behind, backs up against the wall. So they're getting used to that as opposed to the 35-point running clock sort of second half that they got for all 10 of their regular season games. It's a big difference, but they found out in 2 weeks, like, hey, no problem here.
I heard from another Jefferson District coach who was down there to see the Louisa game about how just getting a chance where he wasn't paying attention to his team, he got a chance to watch Brandon Smith go to work. And he was kind of blown away by how good that kid is.
When you get to focus, I mean, so Monacan gets this done by whipping the ball around the field for 300 yards passing. 100 yards on the ground, if you're Louisa, you take that every day of the week. And the middle of that defense was got that job done. I mean, there was no running the ball in the second half for Monacan. It just didn't exist. And it's Louisa's defense. I know Monacan comes up with 28 points, but that was still a really, really good effort from them against just a diverse offense.
I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this, but that coach's take was that he thought Smith might have had 20 tackles.
There was a ton of gang tackling in that one. And, because they were throwing so many little things out in front, I think he's able to sort of fly in and make some plays in the passing game there, too, out in the flats. When you're that long and you're that fast, you have range.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing about this Louisa defense is you got guys coming from the opposite end of the field to make plays all the time.
He can fly, but he reads and reacts so well. Thurston, we've heard similar stuff about how he's making a lot of his tackles coming from the backside. I mean, these guys are flowing. They're moving. This is just a really good defensive football team.
Yeah, and you know we don't even mention Waylon and Raekwon Jones, the games that they
those
have.
Those guys are good, too.
Yeah, they're, like, this is a synced unit, and they've got really good, talented players. It's not just the cohesion. These guys are all really good. That's an added element to it.
It's five or six of these guys who are just awfully good first team district type. These are good players right here. So we didn't die. Devin McGee's another one, man. He's a heck of a player. So that Louisa defense just keeps trucking along. I don't, like you said, 28 points for Monacan, but I don't think they solved it by any means. Just 100 yards on the ground. I think that you got to feel pretty good about Louisa's defense, even though, and they're going up against the Dinwiddie team. We're going to talk about that more in weekly briefing, but you know, a Dinwiddie team that likes to run the ball a little more, it's going to be who can impose their will, I think, in that one.
Yeah, and given the conditions, the line, it'll be sort of two very similar teams, like playing like, as opposed to Monacan. Louisa hasn't seen an offense like that before. You know, Western and Monticello just don't throw the ball as often. Maybe Albemarle a little bit, but just a different level of talent. And so, you know, that's a tough thing to go up against. But they'll be much more comfortable, I think, preparing for Dinwiddie. We'll see if the result is the same. But preparing for that team, I think, looks a little more fun. A little, defensively at least, more up their alley.
And Goochland, you know, they also get the job done. They beat an Amigo team. It's tough. I think to play a team twice in 3 weeks.
We saw Louisa Courtland just twice in a season, how tough that is.
Yeah, it's real difficult, and Goochland handled it really well. A sort of slow first half, for sure, but they got Devin McCray, man. I can't say enough about what kind of football player that guy is. That guy is not... He is whatever they really need him to be. He had the pick for 104 yards, and he took it back when Amelia was kind of sitting on Jasper Carter. He hit him with the end around. He had a rushing touchdown, and then he threw a backbreaker to Dallas Holmes. That guy is just a really, really good football player.
Yeah, and we're getting a chance to see McCray throw the ball around the field a little bit more. And this is sort of what they did when they had Reed Chenault. Like, you were able to sort of lean on teams a little bit differently when they're entirely focused on Carter. McCray's going to be able to find some playmakers on the edge. And
Dallas Holmes so open on that. It was like the one pass they threw the whole game. There was a guy on the sidelines who had never covered Goochland, and he turned and looked at Jim Ridolfi from down there, who covers Goochland all the time, turned and looked at us and said, are they just going to run the ball the entire time? It was like nobody had told him how this whole gig works. Like, I mean, yeah, they're absolutely going to run the ball the entire time. But the big hitter over the top to Dallas Holmes was just huge.
And the Goochland teams have always had that back-breaking play, just waiting to for the right time to throw it out there. And Holmes looked really good in the first round. Yeah. So it seems like that passing game is just getting warmed up. And I mean, if Carter and company in the backfield, if they keep churning up the yardage the way they are, McCray's going to have his opportunities to get some looks downfield.
I talked about how good McCray is, but that was my first look at Goochland this year, and Jasper Carter is bigger than he was last year. He runs even harder than he did last year. Jasper Carter is a moose back there, running back. That guy can flat out play. He did not have his best game, but statistically, but the attention he draws and what it takes to bring that guy down, pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, look at the power backs we've had over the last couple of years. You throw him into that mix. He's mm-hmm. Sabias Foley, same guy. Trey Smith, same guy.
Yeah,
he has that potential, and you can only imagine in a four quarter game how many times you want to tackle that guy. It's just not a fun job.
Dude, I don't want to tackle that guy past that first. I might not even get to the first one.
Yeah,
I mean, he is so tough. He runs. I think he runs low too. Like he has a great pad level. And I think that just makes him just so difficult to bring down.
He's a battering ram.
Gosh, he wears you and wears you and wears you. And as soon as you load up against him, McCray or John King or the Snead Johnson kid.
Perry Snead Johnson.
Yeah, Perry Snead Johnson, Tindy on the bat. I mean, those guys, that is not a fun offense. Wing T has never been fun. Nobody's ever said, like, oh, I love playing against the Wing T. Nobody loves that. But, like, this version of it in particular, with the way Carter can play, the way McCray can hit you on the backside, the way that these other guys, I mean, this is just very reminiscent, I think, of like that Dustin Plummer Goochland team a few years back.
2009 and 2010.
Yeah, when Jordan Jefferson was clicking there at quarterback. I mean, it's a pretty special group. And the way that offensive line's moving people, man, those guys, maulers, they open up holes, everything just... That's a fun offense to watch. I always enjoy the World War II. Like you called the World War II offenses. I love watching those. I think they're fun to see. And Jasper Carter is just that ideal A-back in that kind of group.
Yeah, it's fundamental football. And, at this level, if you can do that and just limit your turnovers, that's how you win playoff games. And there's a reason every year at this point we're covering Goochland football.
Yeah, no question about it. Only team that lost did it in frustrating... I don't know. Maybe you call it dramatic, but frustrating fashion for sure for Monticello to lose to Brookville when they certainly felt like they were in it. A very close game with some tough calls and some tough officiating situations not really going Monticello's way, and tough to see a season come to an end in a game like that.
Yeah, I think if you're the Mustangs, you're really disappointed in the spot that sort of winds up ending the game. It seems like there's maybe a little bit of confusion there, the way things happen. But overall, I think, I don't know that I'd be too surprised that it was a 2-to-1 penalty ratio, when you're on the road, like sometimes that hometown coach.
That's just a fact, man. Yeah. It just happens. Like it happens. Woodbury teams go over to Richmond and
they always talk about it with Benedictine and so forth.
Big time. There's some penalties discrepancies that are easily explained. There's like when UVA basketball plays, there's a reason why they don't get as many fouls of it. They don't attack down the lane nearly as much as other teams. They're not dribble drive guys. So that's easy to explain. But it does seem like when a team that runs into an unfamiliar territory in high school football, it does seem like the officiating generally will tilt the other way.
How many times have we, like Clark County is a classic example of all the Bull Run teams. Doesn't matter what the sport is. Like if we're going up to Clark, their record is meaningless. Like it's going to be a tough game, and you feel like you're going up against, you know, more men that are on the rosters. So,
and I don't know what the cause is. I don't think we're accusing anyone of like actual bias. No. I think that it just seems to it's a pattern that seems to happen.
There is you can tell the teams that. Do our area, the officiating teams that do it, there's a familiarity they have with certain players on certain programs, and you're like, oh, he's not a dirty player, he's just playing hard. So they get, I think some of these home teams get the benefit of the doubt, whereas other visiting teams are like, oh, that looked dirty, and you don't really, you know, it's just, when you see a team over and over again, I think you're willing to give them, cut them a little more slack, and I think that's human nature more than anything. I don't know that this is like, this is not some gambling scheme meant to take down Monticello.
And let's be clear, these we're not talking about crazy, you know, some personal, like run of personal fouls or whatever. But, like, there were some tough calls, some holding calls, some tough stuff. And then, this, like you said, the spot and then the frustration with how long it took to move the ball and others. I mean, that's tough that... That's kind of stuff that you have to overcome if you want to keep moving in the playoffs.
Yeah, and no coach will say, oh, we just lost this game because of the one penalty. Like, you got to line up and play the sport and win the game anyhow.
No question.
And this is a funky game because Monticello comes out, they're up 7-6 because an extra point doesn't go Brookville's way. Then Monticello goes, or Brookville takes a lead, goes for a two-point conversion, fails. And so now you're looking at a 12-7 game and when it should be maybe 14-7. Monticello goes for a two-point convert on their next touchdown. Now you're up 15-12. So we've turned one extra point into a field goal if you're Monticello. Yeah. And that's pretty big. And that winds up, you know, playing a big part in that game. And, you know, where otherwise it should just be about two defenses that lined up really well against two talented offenses.
Give it up for the defenses. You know, we know that Monticello defense led by Garrett Porterfield, awfully good linebacker. They went in, and that's a heck of a job that they did against a Brookville team that boasts Tanner Bernard, who is a heck of a quarterback. He can sling the ball around. They just did a great job. And give it up for the Brookville defense, too, against an explosive Monticello offense, holding them to only that many points and getting out of there with a win. That's a heck of a performance for them. Like you said, two defenses stepped up. John Meeks talked about it.
I mean, the big thing is, so Kevin Jarrell finishes with 284 yards. So a bend but don't break.
Sure.
You can give up the yardage, just don't give up the points.
Yeah.
And it's a great game for Jarrell. I mean, everybody's taking those kind of numbers in a playoff game, especially
absolutely,
in cold conditions. But Brookville just found a way to not let it matter on the scoreboard as much. And, yeah, that's... I think we sort of probably expected a little more of a barn burner in this one. And it's always funny how that can sort of work its way backwards.
Always, always. It seems like any time that you're like, definitely this one is going to be 77-70, you're definitely getting a 19-15er.
Yeah, well, and then watch Dinwiddie, Louisa. Like, oh, it's going to be a good defensive battle. It'll be the Stanton River Western. They'll score every other play. So.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I got to say, happy, you know, obviously – sad to see a career like Kevin Jarrell's come to an end. Austin Haverstrom, all these senior guys that are really, you know, pretty good football players for Monticello, and the way that they stuck with it and it, you know, came back from that reversal, you know, a very frustrating junior campaign that they had. Those guys showed up this year. They strapped it on and they fixed some things. Got to say, you know, really sad to see that come to an end. But happy for John Meeks, you know, the former Louisa coach, getting it done at Brookville. That's exciting for him to keep things moving.
And things at Brookville had really sort of fallen off, and he came in there and got them reversed around pretty quickly. They improved every year, and Brookville's become a team that the JD teams are getting very familiar with.
Yeah.
We're seeing a lot of them getting added to sort of the early out-of-conference play, which is great. I mean, I think those sort of JD connections wind up helping out there, and it's good to, I mean, it's good for our area teams to play these Lynchburg schools. They're all really good.
Yes.
You're only going to get better playing against them, so shout out to Meeks, you know, an old colleague.
Yeah, man, he's a good man. So it's great to see him taking care of business down there. Too bad it had to come at the expense of a local squad. But like we said, man, the season Monticello had.
It's a 3-7 team from a year ago. I mean, that's a big difference in one calendar year.
I mean, that's amazing. And what they did to shore things up defensively after a really, like, pretty disastrous junior season on defense, man, really impressive. And that offense kept humming, found some different dimensions. The runner that Kevin Gerald became this year was really, really good. Yeah. I mean, just really, really good.
It's as simple as that.
As simple as that. So that takes us through those were the three games this week. And you know, you got Louisa, you got Goochland moving on. Goochland's going to take on Pocosin. Then you got Louisa taking on Dinwiddie. But we want to jump in and do some awards real quick. And the CNG Road Grader of the Week is the first one. That's a lineman that really stepped up and had a big game. And it's Logan Yancey out there at Louisa County.
Yeah, the cool thing about Louisa's offensive line is it's mostly seniors. And they're all big and bad. And you can really give this award to them almost any week, whether it's Tony Thurston or Robbie Gwynn or Dustin Matney. All those guys are so good, but Logan Yancey's the sophomore in the group, the young guy, and he's in there on all the big plays that wound up happening, the 4-for-4 on fourth down conversions. Like, that is all offensive line play right up front. But looking forward, I mean, to years to come, that's the kid that you build around. It's, you know, he's been in this playoff environment. He's going to be a key leader for them in the next 2 years. Great job by the young kid hanging in there with the seniors and finding a way to play just like them.
No question. Like you said, that Louisa offensive line as a whole, man, what they've been clearing the way for the last couple of years, really impressive. Offensive player of the week, Malik Bell, 24 for 203, touchdown, 5 for 6 passing. Malik Bell, really, you know, we know what kind of player he is. We know what kind of clutch guy that he is. He has that gene in him, and another great performance from him.
Yeah, I think the clutch here was the 79-yard touchdown he has. That is that's just a huge break in that game for them, and that's early in the second half, first half. Sorry. Yeah, 200 and some yards on the ground, 203, I think, and just a real gritty job. 5 for 6 passing, and a couple really big plays through the air. You know, the first touchdown they get set up by a nice play, a little rollout, and he finds Sims in the flat to set up a short touchdown. Just a really good job of taking care of the ball, no interceptions. That was the big thing for Louisa. The turnovers were on their side. You know, it was their defense coming up with them, not their offense giving up the ball. So another big game for Bell, who... he didn't get to play in the playoffs last year. You know, he was injured, and that was sort of played a role in them coming up short in that first round game. But these first two games, he's played lights out, and he might have saved his best performance of his quarterbacking career against a very good Monacan team.
No question about it. And then defensive players of the week, we had two guys. Got to give it up to the Goochland secondary. Devin McCray had a pick that. 104-yard return down to the one, got tripped up there. Then he plugged it in on the next play on a QB sneak. Devin McCray, we talked about him earlier, man. He's just a heck of a football player. But that pick was huge.
Yeah, and your description of it is very artistic.
Well, that was Dallas Holmes' pick. That was the second one.
Yeah.
That one was nuts too, man. It's this pirouetting ballet motion. He kind of... when he opened up to try and, you know, show his face so he's not getting called for pass interference, he kind of opened toward the sideline, and then he kind of worked his way back through the air. Look, man, that's a way my body doesn't move. There's no question Dallas Holmes, heck of an athletic play, and that's the other guy that we got to give this award to. Dallas Holmes and Devin McCray, those two big picks in a game where they really needed him against Amelia, with Amelia kind of threatening, giving them a little more of a game than they probably hoped. And those were just clutch plays that helped put Amelia away in that second half. Big-time plays.
It is interesting in the sort of playoff tradition for Goochland over the last couple of years, just how many of the big plays have come from the secondary.
Yeah.
It's just those are the guys that seem to rise in playoff time, and it's always fun to see that area of the field affecting the game, because usually there's a fun return followed by it.
And yeah.
It gets everybody riled up.
Oh, the return by McCray is bonkers. Like, he came from way deep in that end zone, finally finds the sideline. I mean, it was just a heck of a return. And Holmes didn't get a chance to return because he was too busy spinning and falling. But a absolutely crucial interception that helped ice the game for him. So, you know, big week coming up for Gutzel and Louisa. Happy Thanksgiving to anybody who's who's listening. And we're going to have a couple of big football games on Friday night to cover. We'll have a weekly briefing. Will be up a little later this week. Certainly want to check that out. And we really appreciate you listening to the Scrimmage Play Podcast.